Hi, and welcome to the Positivity Podcast. This podcast focuses on connecting with people from all different backgrounds and walks of life from around the world. Throughout this podcast, you'll listen to people's stories, their experiences, the trials and tribulations that they've overcome, why they do what they do, and current trends. Topics may vary from personal development, mindset, people sharing stories, authors, coaches, ex-military personnel, professionals, and everyday people in walks of life. I hope you enjoy this podcast as I aim to connect with people for them to share their story, their experiences, and why they do what they do, because I have a deep interest in humans and providing valuable content to the audience. If you would like to be on this podcast, you can email me at thepositivitypodcast@gmail.com in the notes. You can connect with me on social media in the notes, positivity94 on the Instagram. If there's any tips, any advice, any feedback, I would highly appreciate it. So let's get into the show. Thank you for your support, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Subscribing really helps, and you know, I appreciate all your support. Hope you enjoy this show.
Tuning in, trying to find out how to win. Go along and tell a friend. Marathon, you know the game. Keep on running, never end. Getting better, make amends. Adam got it, Adam got it, Adam got it, Adam got it. Positivity.
Tune in. Right, Seven, it's an absolute pleasure to have you back on the podcast again. How are you doing?
I'm great, man. Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be back here and to be chatting with you and to make some magic happen.
Yeah, no, same here. It's been a while, hasn't it? I think it's been, it must be a year and a half, maybe.
Year and a bit. Yeah, man, it's been a while. Lots changed.
Yeah, a lot of things happening. And I think when we first spoke, we, you know, touched base with yourself. And I remember you talking about your upbringing and the things that you went through. That was a really good conversation. People need to check out, you know, part one as well. But like, you know, what's going on with you? I remember, like, before we started recording, you were talking about, you know, things that are going on with yourself, but we're going to kind of go, you know, with the flow and talk about, you know, mindset, startups and things like that. But, you know, what's going on with you at the minute? Like, sure. Anything you want to go into?
Sure. Yeah, man. Well, no, thanks for the question. And yeah, our last chat was really, really interesting. And as a kind of refresher on that, you know, a lot of my life is all around founder success, and especially over that last year, really, I'd say the last year or so since we spoke, my life's become even more about this area of founder success. So what makes a founder or what would help a founder increase their chances of success as much as possible? And as that little bit of a refresher, the reason that's really, really important to me is because to me, this is how we change the world, right? So, My whole life is about helping founders, startups, entrepreneurs, and aspiring entrepreneurs figure out how to increase their chances of success as much as possible. Because to me, through building socially minded businesses, so sustainable businesses, but that the ones that are socially minded, that is how we make the world a better place. As a result of various different things I experienced in my childhood, which I think we spoke about a little bit in that part one. You know, I got to this age eventually around the age of 18 where I just really, really desperately wanted to make my life better, but also make the world a better place at the same time. Now, for a long time, I thought that was physically impossible to do both at the same time. I thought I'd either have to take a high paying job that I hated or do something like working in the government, which I really did not want to do, especially with the way it looks right now. Or just all kinds of things. And I just thought this is my life and I'm going to have to be unhappy no matter what I choose. Maybe work for an NGO, but take, you know, a low salary or whatever. And at some point, well, there's a whole story behind it, but to cut the long story short, I discovered this thing called social entrepreneurship. at this time when I thought it's impossible to change your life and the world for the better at the same time, here is this thing that kind of hit me in the face and went, here's how you change your life and the world at the exact same time. And it blew my mind. And so, you know, fast forward the last 5 or so years of me throwing myself into the space, doing all the self-study possible, reading all the books that I found interesting, trying and testing and failing and learning through that, being a part of probably 3 or 4 different startups at this point. Now I have a startup, a business, and another full-time role supporting startups myself, as well as a number of things going on outside of that. And so it's very, very full on. But my whole life has now become about, well, how do we help founders increase that chance of success? And that's kind of what it stems back to, is some of the stuff we talked about last time of, well, because this is how we make the world a better place. Social entrepreneurship is how you do both of those things. And through that, as a vehicle, you empower founders to say, well, this area isn't good enough. Let's make it better. This charity needs more support. Let's get more support to them. This system, or the way this industry works, is too polluting. Let's change that. This customer is vastly underserved. Let's make their lives a little bit better. This is how we change the world for the better. So yeah, man, I'm here to encourage that as much as possible, helping founders through everything from the kind of operational elements of success to their leadership, their own leadership skills, and things like mindset and mental health that will inevitably impact all of that as well. So those are the things I tend to talk about, and let's see what we can kind of dive into today.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome, you know, the work that you do and the fact that, you know, you really love and enjoy what you do. No, you're welcome. And I think, like, it's something that, you know, is very, you know, for people starting out in the world, for a lot of people who are startups, for a lot of people who want to start their own business, I think, you know, you need that guidance, you need that support. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good that you're in that world where, and in that type of work where you're there to support people in what they do. And I think, like, with that, what would you say is the number one place to start, or one thing that you think startups struggle with?
Well, there's a lot of things that startups tend to struggle with, and it depends a little bit on the founder and their predispositions. I think if I had to choose one, I'm going to choose two. I'm going to answer a different question to what you asked, and I can give you two. But they're two very different things. So one is on the personal side, which is, why are you getting started? Some founders get started purely because they want to make money. And I'm going to be honest, I actually don't think that's a horrible reason to get started, so long as that's not your only motivation. Like I said, one of my two goals was to radically improve my own life. That includes improving it financially. So that is an okay reason. But as a result of that, a lot of founders, as either that or other not so great reasons, founders don't get started with a really powerful why. A number of different things can break down depending on what that reason is. So some founders get started because internally they feel like they have something to prove. What that means is, you're probably going to overwork yourself, you're probably not going to take feedback very well, and you're going to get a lot of no's and a lot of feedback as a founder. Okay. It can range from anything from, like, that kind of thing, straight through to, I'm too motivated by money. We might even be making some money, but then our organizational culture is shit. We have problems with press and PR as a result. Things seem to be going for a while and that going all right for a while, and then they start to break down. And that is not something you want as a founder. So that's kind of a number one thing, is, where are you getting started from internally, within yourself, your mindset, your motivation? What is that leading you, or how is that leading you to get started? And what impact is that going to have? Get that really, really clear, more constructive. And we can talk about more about what that means a little bit if you want to, but get really clear on that is number one, I would say, that I see all the time and that I'd recommend to founders to think about. A number two, which is very operational, so very different to that, is, a lot of founders won't test their assumptions very well. A lot of founders jump into building something. Okay. They might be, you know, let me build my tech platform, or let me build a bunch of products. Let me put 10 grand together to start doing things or whatever. you know, making the first products and trying to sell them without knowing if there's a market for it or if people really want it. So what that tends to look like is, cool, I'm going to spend all this time developing, let's say some of the founders I work with as an example are building tech platforms. I'm going to build the tech platform and try to sell it before I've done good enough market research. Then I've wasted all this money, potentially wasted all this money, haven't then tested that enough, tried to sell it, it's not working, I don't know why, I'm getting really frustrated. And then what a lot of more experienced founders as well as investors are used to hearing is, the term is something along the lines of throwing bad money at bad money or something like that. Like you throw money at the situation because it's not working, but the situation is what needs to change. That context, what you're doing, the product, the mindset, something there is what needs to radically shift. What I'd say to the really early stage founders is take things slower. Instead of rushing into building something and trying to sell it, first, do some really clear, detailed market research. It doesn't need to take a long time. A lot of founders are so excited they want to jump in. You can still jump in, but jump in the right order, in the right way. So if you do some really fantastic market research and that says there is something worth pursuing, or it doesn't, or somewhere in between, you then build a really, really, really basic prototype of some kind. And then do what we call idea validation. Validate that idea using that basic prototype. It's not an MVP. It's not something that's crazy, time consuming or expensive to build. You go to your real customers and say, use this a little bit. Give me feedback. Would you use this if this was a full thing? What are your thoughts on this? That's the really short version of how that works. And then you go and then you improve and improve. And then once you have something where you have all those questions answered, you have a great prototype, then you can go and build an MVP and trying to start selling that and building a business off of that. But a lot of founders jump in, there isn't much of a market, there's too many untested assumptions, and they just waste a whole bunch of time and money. And it's really sad because some of those ideas might be really, really great, or some elements of those ideas might be great, or the motivation that we talked about a minute ago, that might be great. But if you do things in the wrong order without the right testing, a lot of the time things break down. And as a result of this, depending on your industry and, you know, where in the world you are, the stats are a little bit different, but on a whole, there's a massive failure rate in entrepreneurship. Within 5 years, you've got anywhere from a 50 to a 90, sometimes even 95% chance of a failure, which is huge. So when I say, you know, one of my goals is to, well, essentially my goal with a lot of the things I do now is to help founders increase their chances of success. What it means is so that instead of there being a 50% chance of failure or even up to a 90% chance of failure in the next few years, let's bring that down to 30. Let's bring that down. You know what I mean? Let's bring that down as much as possible. And you do that by doing the right things in the right order and also building the right character and being the right kind of leader, like I was mentioning in that first point, which is why I wanted to give you both. So I think that probably wraps up all that stuff nicely.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you, giving me that explanation and going into it in that order. And I think it's super important, isn't it, you know, in just getting started and following those right steps. And you know, a lot of it is accountability, isn't it? You know, looking at why, you know, you ultimately, you know, you mentioned the why. Why are you ultimately doing this? What are your aims? You know, is it money? Is it, you know, and that's not always a bad thing. But then, like you said, to keep that motivation and that work going, you know, there has to be some other why. There has to be some other reason, yeah. Because you could be getting loads of money, but then if it doesn't make you happy, over time, the things that you might think grant you happiness over time, it might just wear off. It might be good for the short term. You know, you see a lot of famous people who do really well, really successful, and then they just plateau because they've bought the things that they wanted to buy. They've earned the things they want to get.
And they exactly. Got that,
yeah.
This is the thing you need to understand as a founder is it is hard. Okay, it is a lot of effort. It's a lot of time. It takes so much from you that if you don't love what you're doing, you would be completely insane to be doing it. And if you don't love what you're doing and you're not totally tired, you're probably not doing very well. You're doing something else wrong. So if you're having fantastic success as a founder, you're going to need to be putting in a lot of work. And to be able to sustainably put that work in, you need to be driven by something very powerful and very, very real, which is why I'm always kind of questioning founders' motivations, making sure they're in the right headspace, and also working with founders who are in the thick of it, who are having some success, to make sure they take some time to take some step backs. I'm actually planning a little bit of like a residential program for some of my founders, which will be based not around kind of startup skills, but although it will help them with work, will be based around elements of mental health, coaching, trust building, leadership, team building, instead of the kind of more boring operational work, because you need to take care of these things to be successful long term. Otherwise, bro, it's gonna be next to impossible. And in a way, you know, as it should be, you know, it shouldn't be so easily accessible to, I don't think anyway, either should be so easily accessible to people who don't really give a shit about the right things. If entrepreneurship is more successful to the passionate, driven, socially minded people, the people who want to make the world a better place in certain ways, then the world is overall going to become a better place, which I think we can all agree is a great impact, basically. It's one of the great impacts of entrepreneurship. So, you know, you must be in it for the right reasons.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, you know, all these right reasons will help fuel, you know, what you're working towards, isn't it? And I think people sometimes expect instant results straight away. They want instant gratification. And there is a process to, you know, life. There's a process to building things and things working out. Some people might excel faster or whatever compared to other places, but that might just be based on where you're at. Might be luck. And I think sometimes what I've seen, some people might quit or might give up or things might not work out because they just didn't keep pushing long enough and they weren't patient enough for things to work out. And I think as well, like you mentioned, all these different steps and doing, you know, founding a business or whatever, you know, it's like, say, building a house. You put those foundations in place first. You're not going to start building on all the other stuff when you haven't done the foundations. And I think some people
wouldn't build a roof, leave it there and be like, cool, it's done now. So when the foundations are built, we can put it on. No, you'd build the foundations first, right? And then build the roof on top of it.
Yeah, that's it. And then you work your way up to that. And it's like there's things that I want to, you know, I have ideas about doing like my own coffee business, like online. So I'm currently researching like drop shipping, e-commerce and different ways around it. I haven't chucked any money into it because I'm still learning and researching it.
Exactly.
But I almost did chuck loads of money into buying all the stuff. But then I researched it and was like, okay, I'm going to keep doing that and then build them. But I think, you know, as people get very excited, it's very easy to get excited and chuck money into market research or chuck money into getting certain things. But then if you've not ironed out those creases, then that's where, you know, things might start to go wrong. And I think, like you said, a lot of businesses fail in the first, you know, starting out 5 years or whatever.
Yeah. And that's a really great practical example of what I mean. Get really, really excited, but then you go, hold on, let me take a step back, bring it back, turn it back, look into this a bit more, research this a bit more, take things slower, instead of chucking a bunch of money into stuff before you know it's going to work. Now, this is the thing, is a lot of founders, a lot of successful founders as well, will give the kind of feedback of just get started. And I agree, like what this isn't saying, like, what I'm not saying is, take ages and do things super, super slowly. If you want to take your time, actually more people can afford to take their time than we think. A lot of us feel very rushed. Time is of the essence, but things aren't necessarily rushed straight away from the beginning. However, if you do want to get started with relative speed, that is fine. This, in a way, actually speeds you up because it means you're not wasting time on things that might not work. That's essentially the crux of this. So you can get started right away with some of the right steps just so happen to come first, as opposed to out of order or in an order that's not as useful to you. So really, that's what it's about, is when you do get started and with however much energy you get started with, just do the right things in the right order. And some magic can really, really happen. Some of my favorite founders to work with have been people that have said, I haven't actually got the platform yet. I've kind of only got an idea, except I've got people all over the country that are interviewing other people to be part of my market research. And so as a result, I have over 600 people in my market research before they even have a demo of a product. They don't even have a pre MVP. They've got nothing, but they've got 600 early adopters in the sense of those people are in love with the product idea. And they're in love with it because they've been part of the market research and idea validation behind it by being interviewed and being part of focus groups and whatever else. And ultimately, it was a very socially driven business as well, which made that easier. And I was like, you're going to be such a fantastic entrepreneur. I'm so excited for you, when I was speaking to her about that. Because I was like, most people would jump straight into being like, here's the demo, would you use it, and trying to sell it to the customer. Instead, she went, get a big group of ideal customers together first. And it was beautiful. It was really exciting to hear about. That's the kind of thing I would encourage really, really, really bold entrepreneurs to do, is actually take an outside the box thinking to bringing together an audience of that kind. Now, there are a few ways you can do that. The example I just gave, I think, was a great example, but it will depend on your industry. If you're B2B or B2C as well, that will depend a little bit on stuff like that. I knew one entrepreneur who was, she couldn't really do much idea validation because she worked in the industry that her startup was in, which meant there was a conflict of interest. So she had to wait till she got a new job before she could like speak to the most relevant people, which made idea validation really, really hard. My recommendation to her, to give you an example of the outside the box thinking, was find people who used to work in your industry who don't anymore. Maybe they're retired, 65, 70 years old, who can tell you, well, for the last 30 years of working there, we were doing this using this online system, but it was really clunky and slow and cost us loads of money. You know what I mean? So I'd rather we didn't, you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. Find some outside of the box ways of doing things. One of the other things you can do, which I'm a big fan of, and this is kind of a separate point in the sense of, I'm always recommending to founders, look at doing this as much as possible, regardless of your industry, is build yourself up as an authority in your space. What that means is essentially build a personal brand for us Gen Zers, right? Build a personal brand around what you're doing, so that you have some audience around you and so that you have some authority when speaking to relevant people, such as customers or investors, if you want investors, or end up ever kind of going for investment. What that can look like is everything from building a great, strong social media profile, having a podcast like you do, and a number of other different things. My biggest thing for me is actually events. I love bringing people together. I run an event called Founders Live London. I live in London, in the UK, and so I bring people together a few times a year for this event, which so far has been going really well. Hopefully I get some sponsorship soon, but the point isn't for it to make money, because I'm just going to reinvest all that back into the event and the business. What that's going to do is be an excuse to bring people together, build mailing lists, build social media marketing off the back of those things. That's me trying to build myself as an authority in that space. So do what you can based on what you enjoy the most. If you enjoy audio content and conversations, have a podcast conversation like we are. Whatever it is that works for you, look at that, look for that, and build yourself as an authority in your space through that medium. So that's a big thing I always recommend to founders.
No, I love that. And I think, you know, it's great, you know, that you're hosting those events and, you know, it's really positive and it helps other people. And I think like, you know, it's true, isn't it? Like, I think you have to, you know, get started somewhere, and you know, some people take longer than others, and that's okay. You know, you've got to do whatever you think is right, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
But do you think that some people are very self-conscious and worry what other people are thinking about them or how their business or what they're trying to create is going to look? So I've chatted to some people who, I think during like early COVID when I was doing my podcast, reached out to me. And they were saying, what do I need? Do I need all this equipment and everything? And I think they were worried about the stuff that they needed in order to do a podcast or how it would look. And my advice was just get started, because I just used my phone. I remember just holding my phone in my car without a microphone, and I was just talking into my phone. And I think I did that for the first 40 episodes. I didn't really care what, you know, about that at the time. But do you think that people worry about what people, how their business is going to look and all the rest of it?
That's a great question. At the end of the day, everyone is human. Founders are people, and people, different people for different reasons, will have different focuses or issues or insecurities or whatever. The kind of person it sounds like you're describing is potentially a perfectionist, right? Someone who is like, this needs to be perfect. That can be an issue for a number of people. You know what? It's a really big issue, funny enough, for really techie people or product-driven people. People are, who are like, I know what the whole product is going to look like. They're really passionate about building that product. But that means they want it to be perfect. And actually, the reality of early stage entrepreneurship is you kind of, you're kind of right in the sense of you kind of do just need to get started. If you think about some of the steps I outlined earlier of do some great research, then build something really basic, then put it out there and test it and ask loads of questions to your ideal target audience. That is how it should start. And it starts that way by not having a perfect product. It's impossible to do that and have a perfect product, because a perfect product assumes you have the answers to all those questions when the chances are you probably don't. And so, you know, perfectionism is something that comes up from people that are worried about how they're going to be viewed and things like that. But it's something, you know, if you want to be, if you're super early stage, 99% of the time, you need to be able to overcome that to some extent. And the way you do that is by being confident that what you're doing is just a prototype and you're going to improve. So if you say, look, this is not at all a reflection of our final product. I'm doing this specifically for feedback. And I'm confident that's the right thing to do, because by getting that feedback, I can give you a perfect product later. You know, so I'm putting out this perfect product and it's okay that it's not perfect. Most, and I say most people, it's very, almost impossible to find someone who goes, well, I'm never going to buy from you because of that. It's like, no, that's not how people work, right? So there are definitely, I have definitely seen, you know, the kind of thing you're describing. And I would agree, you need to throw yourself in there doing the right things at the right time, leaving perfectionism at the door. There's a flip side of that, though. So perfectionism, I think, is one thing that can lead to that kind of situation you just described. But another is just insecurity in general of how you're going to be perceived. So it's not that something needs to be perfect. For some people, there is no such thing as perfect, because they're convincing themselves there's some kind of sabotaging voice coming up saying, you know, within them, and I'm very, very used to this. This happened to me for a long time, still sometimes does. This sabotaging voice will come up and say, don't put this out there. Don't put out the social media post. Don't, you know, put out this communication for the event. Don't even run the event, maybe, because it won't be good enough. People will judge you, et cetera, et cetera. A founder needs to be able to listen to better, more constructive voices, right? Allow the wiser version of yourself to come out and say, it's okay, because this is a learning process. Or most people are too absorbed in their own lives to care that much about whether this goes well or not. That's true. As that sounds a bit pessimistic, but actually that's quite a wise thing to be able to say. Most people are a little too busy with their own lives to care that much about if what you've done is perfect or not. To them, perfect looks different to you. Being able to channel the right, more constructive, wiser kind of voices within yourself is also a big part of overcoming that kind of challenge you just described. So yeah, that kind of challenge is something I see people have a lot. There are other challenges that get in the way of people getting started and in a really powerful way. If perfectionism is one, insecurity is another. I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this. If perfectionism is one of the reasons that holds you back, and insecurity is another, your own kind of motivation that we talked about earlier is inevitably going to be a third. I.e., so I think this is something I was trying to get at a little bit earlier. say you're motivated by, I just really want to prove myself. You might be too focused on trying to prove yourself and not on the ultimate aim that any entrepreneur should be looking at, which I'll get to in a minute. That is something I see come up for founders once in a while of, and actually there's some data to suggest that social entrepreneurs, this is really fun, well, also I say fun fact, kind of revealing, but a high proportion of male social entrepreneurs get into social entrepreneurship because they feel they have something to prove to their fathers, which is a really fascinating like psychological link. That is another one of the reasons people jump to things for the wrong reasons. So that's a reason number three. And there are a number of others. The money stuff we talked about earlier, reason number four, gets people to kind of think about things in all the wrong ways. And unfortunately, that is one of those things that holds you back or increases your chances of failure. Now, here's the thing I think I would recommend to anyone who's in the entrepreneurship space or wants to get into it, especially early stage stuff, is this is the thing I was alluding to a minute ago of, well, what is the right reason to get into something? So if these are all the wrong reasons to get into something or the wrong ways of thinking about things that lead to you starting in the wrong ways, what is the right reason? At the end of the day, all these things we're talking about, the perfectionism, the insecurity, the wrong motivations, all these things can be overcome by one simple thing. Having the frame of mind that you are doing this to be of service to the people that you want to serve, to the customers whose lives you want to change. Even for-profit companies must have someone's life they want to improve. I'm building this tech platform because in this industry, the way things work right now are slow, frustrating, and costly. Let's take all those three things away for the people who, like myself, needed to use this technology. It can be something as simple as that, but that is making someone's life better. It is. You know what I mean? It doesn't need to be a nonprofit organization with a grand mission of making the world a more equitable place. Although you can still believing in those things is great, but it doesn't need to be that and just that for it to be something that's of service to people. If you're like, I'm dedicated to being of service to this group of people, what you get is, I might be a little bit insecure, but I'm dedicated to serving these people. So I'm going to throw myself into it anyway. It becomes a lot easier to throw yourself in like you described, right? This isn't perfect, but I can be confident with the fact that these are just first steps to learn because I need to learn to be able to serve this group of people. And then the things around motivation and money, well, that should be your motivation. Let me help people first. Money can come, great. But if you want to serve people, you'll figure out how to serve them. And when you're serving them, you'll be providing value to them. When you're providing value, money can naturally come. So all these things connect, but make sure what you're doing is of service.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, really true and important. I think like you said, you know, money will come if you're just naturally helping other people, if you're of service, you know, whether that's, you know, helping other people in business or you're helping people with their mental health, whatever that is, if you're offering a service and, you know, that drive is towards, you know, that customer, that person, you know, that's where, you know, the magic kind of happens really. And people will see, you know, if you're genuine, you actually want that change and shift to, you know, and helping someone else, that's, you know, being off service is the main thing. And I think especially in the world of business, you know, you need to be off service. You know, if you have a business, whatever it is, you know, you're going to have a customer, you have to be off service to them, depending on whatever kind of business it is. I also think like as well, do you think, like with people in business, people starting out, you know, they need to look after their mental health. They need to look after their well-being. You know, can founders, you know, if they're spinning their wheels, really be as effective in their business and trying to have that balance with it all? I mean, that's probably key. If people aren't well in themselves, they might need to just take the foot off the gas a little tiny bit or have a bit of assistance. Because I think, I think COVID highlighted that a lot of people took the foot off the gas, was able to reflect and wind down. And then do you think that's important, you know, in starting out or in just
100%. So here's what I'll say. And this is easier to understand during your journey if you understand it at the beginning of your journey. So what I like to say to my founders is, in the early days, you are the business. Okay. You know, those times when, or the times in the business where if you don't do it, it doesn't happen because it's all about you. Even if you have a small team, everything's around you. You couldn't take a holiday or whatever because things so much is around you. In those early days, what that means is you are the business. So everything about you becomes reflected in the organization. If you are joyous and happy, if you are expansive, if you're interested, if you're motivated, the business will be full of joy, will be motivated, will be attractive to potential customers. If you are stressed out, if you are broken down, if you are anxious and you are tired, then the business will be under stressed and breaking down and full of feelings of anxiety and all kinds of things like that. It will be a direct reflection of that. So you must be able to support yourself as much as possible, to be in as well mentally and emotionally well of a place as possible. Otherwise, it will reflect on the business. A lot of people are like, there's so many founders I speak to, and it's really a shame to me because I know what's going to happen if they don't take a step back, but it's so hard to tell someone you need to take a step back, is they start going, I'm just super exhausted. They start going, or maybe it'll be even be for a while, this has been really draining on me. I don't know if what I'm doing is right. I feel all alone in this process. And I kind of start to go, and they'll do it because this is the key thing. A lot of people do that because they go, yeah, but I need to. It's not going to get built otherwise. Or I need to because, you know, my customers need this solution. A lot of people are very, emotionally driven to be successful for the sake of their customer and the people they want to help, especially if they're kind of social enterprises. So people go, I need to do this because I need to help this customer. What you need to understand is you're not building anything if the business itself is under stress and breaking down. You're not helping anyone if the business itself is under stress and breaking down. So knowing that it's a reflection of you is important. For not just for your taking care of yourself, like it's not just the airy fairy, oh, this is, you know, be nice to yourself. Yeah, be nice to yourself. But even for your own motivations of making a successful business, you must be mentally well and kind to yourself because it directly affects how effective the business is able to be. So being able to take care of yourself is important for so many reasons, not just for your own long-term health, but so that you can keep going and build the business, so that the business itself can be in a healthy place. And so all of that to say, I'm always trying to make sure mental health and well-being is at the core of everything I build out for founders or the ways I help them and the narratives that I create. Founders need to work really hard, and I'm not going to start telling founders, you know, don't work hard. But what I will never tell a founder is push yourself so hard that things start going wrong, because that's fucking stupid. You don't want things to go wrong. That's the whole point. You don't want things to go wrong. You want things to go really well. So figuring out what works for you to keep you as an individual, because everyone's a little bit different, what works for you to keep yourself well and mentally and emotionally sound so that the business can stay, you know, sound and be a positive reflection of the positive, most positive version of you, that is something you must focus on. Finding that balance early on or even before you start is really, really, really helpful, because what so many founders I've worked with will do is it's only when they start feeling the breakdown that they do something about it. And by then it is sometimes a little bit too late. Because the thing is, what I'm not trying to say is when you're in the middle of a really crucial part of your business, maybe you've just raised seed funding and your staff is growing by 300% and whatever, you don't want to be then at that point where you're really needed to be like, cool, now's the time to go on a holiday because I'm feeling stressed out. Like that is not, I don't think that's a point where you should be going on holiday. I think that's a point where you should be grinding. But if you don't know how to keep yourself mentally well before and after that, then you might get to that point and be too tired to grind effectively. Does that make sense? So this isn't me saying don't put in hard work as a founder. This is me saying put in the right support around you so that you don't get to the point where you have to make that choice.
Yeah, it's having that balance and even keel, isn't it? Whilst, you know, you're spinning those 20 plates or whatever. And I think, you know, things domino. And if you're not looking after yourself, that will leak into your business. If you're leading people, you know, you, if you're stressed or anxious, you might talk to people a certain way.
Yes.
And then they're not going to feel great. They're not going to want to go to work. And then it just kind of dominoes. And then, you know, I've seen it happen and play out in hospitality and restaurants I've worked in the past. You know, if you're not happy, the manager might be stressed. The manager might be off. That leaks into the workplace.
Yes.
People then become unhappy. Then the customers aren't happy because they pick up on it. They pick up on the stress, and they're not getting the service they want. And or it might be the in the kitchen and the chef. So you can see why it's so important. That's one example. But obviously in other businesses, it's important because things do leak into businesses. And like you said, if you're, you know, you have to work hard, obviously. You have to want, you know, to do well. But if your team need you, for example, you're not going to take a holiday because that will then affect the morale in the team. And they want like a leader who has those people skills and understands people. So it's looking at maybe what I say, or what I think sometimes is you being the customer or being that other member of staff and flipping it around. How would you want that leader to be, isn't it? How would, how do you want that service? I think that helps probably sometimes, because I think when people are so tunnel visioned and they're going through the motions, but they might not be able to slow things down and be able to do that.
What helps with this is an understanding of what great leadership looks like and what great organizational culture looks like. And even for some people, it might even be learning what these things are to begin with. What you're describing there is, you know, a toxic organizational culture where as soon as the leader or manager is off, suddenly it trickles down to everybody and everything just gets worse. That is not the position that you want to be in. Sorry, let me just fix my camera really quickly. That is not the position you want to be in. You must be able to learn what effective leadership looks like and what great organizational culture looks like. And you can do a little bit of an exercise, which actually, funny enough, is kind of what you just started describing, where you work backwards from this is how I want people to feel. And the kind and the value. So I guess two things: how do I want people to feel, and the values you want to espouse. And then you work backwards. How do I build that? Well, if I want it to be an inclusive place where people feel great when they come in, it needs to be everything from the way we treat people to the kind of practices we have as an organization and everything in between. Cool. That's not going to work if you don't treat people right. So if one of my values is I want everyone who walks through the doors to feel really happy, feel like themselves, the staff need to be people who are going to encourage that kind of energy in the room. They're not going to do that if I treat them like shit. Cool. So my organizational culture needs to be let's treat everyone with respect. Now that you know what I mean, that's what you should be doing anyway. But as an example, making part of the training in the organization for your managers, say you're a leader and you have a group of managers to train, part of training them needs to be, look, this needs to be a great place to work. So everyone here needs to feel great. If someone's having an off day, who's a staff member, we help them out. If you are having an off day, don't let that trickle down to staff members. Get some support with that. That is part of your organizational culture. And being able to put your foot down about that is part of leadership. And actually, great leaders are people who are able to do that early on before they need to. So what I'm describing, like the example I described, kind of takes from your hospitality example. But what if you've just started the business and it's just you, or maybe you and one other person? Putting that down first, and here's another tip for founders, that kind of thing needs to be put down, literally written down on paper first before you get into the situation of needing to make that decision. Put down, these are our values. These are the kind of organizational culture I want to work to. Here's how we're going to work together and treat each other to achieve that culture. Because eventually, when we're big enough for that kind of effect to be had, here's how I want to be impacting everything from staff to customers. Yes, it does impact your customers, but actually you should want it to impact your staff too, because that creates better output, right? So there's the balance of essentially doing the right thing for people is also what's best for the business. A lot of people forsake that. I think that's because there are some industries where that gets forsaken and like there is still output. So like people I know who work in finance, for example, very overworked, workplace might not be great, but loads of people are still trying to work in finance because the output happens and the output makes everyone lots of money. And so there are industries where, unfortunately, these things are kind of let go, but you don't, most entrepreneurs, there are examples I've seen where things still aren't great, but a lot of entrepreneurs don't have the room to have shitty organizational culture, because then you're trying to compete with, if your culture isn't one of your selling points, then how are you more unique than the big players in that industry? So, you know, most industries can't get away with being shit, but some entrepreneurs, some entrepreneurs will still try to get away with it. Actually, it will increase your chances of success if you try to be the best possible person and build the best possible culture.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. A really good point. And I think, like, you know, with that, it depends on who you are as a person, isn't it? Your qualities. Like, some people might not be so empathic, or if people are too empathic, they you know, certain things might knock them harder compared to other people. Some people can deal with stress or get on with people talk to them like shit. Some people can't cope with that. Some people work differently. So I think it's also very like a personal thing, isn't it, within the person. Some people just aren't suited to certain industries based on that, and they're probably not going to excel as well. Some people might be able to switch, you know, not say switch off, but might not be as affected by certain things, because some industries are very difficult, very harsh. Was it a job I was going for? It was a sales job, I think. I can't remember the industry, but it was like a sales, for like a sales position. And it was very, very like cutthroat. I mean, even on the phone interview, it was very like cutthroat, let alone like doing the job. So I mean, it's, oh, what was it? That's gonna really bug me now. Yeah, but anyway, certain, you know, I think certain industries probably suit certain people, I think, as well. But do you think also, you know, like, people like to see the process of businesses starting up, and I think people have to trust that process and go along with that. It's like when you look at people's stories or how they started and that progression and that struggle, people, you know, like to hear that story. You look at Amazon, you look at these companies where they started in a garage or they started out from nothing. I think people, when they're going through those motions, don't always think of that. You know, they want to be, you know, we all want to do well in whatever. But do you know when you peel back those layers and you look back?
Yes. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think sometimes, so it's the short version of what it sounds like you're describing to me is being so focused on the short term that you don't see the long-term vision. You don't realize everything you're doing is part of a macro scale something. And so get hyper-focused on, oh, it's taken me 6 months and I've only gotten this far or whatever. And you forget, cool, in 10 years, that 6 months is going to have been a tiny part of things. And you're probably going to have some amazing success in that next 10 years. 10 years isn't even that long of a time, really. And so that 6 months is just a tiny part of that, and you'll be able to tell what part that played. So forge ahead. If you genuinely feel like you've wasted 6 months and you can figure out why and make sure it doesn't happen again. But if it's just you're beating yourself up, then, you know, you've probably lost sight, at least in that specific moment, you've lost sight of some of your vision for why you're getting involved in things. I guess there's a flip side to that, though, where... you know, some people do idolize those stories. So I think there's some people that idolize those, some people that don't focus on the stories enough, or that don't remind themselves of those kinds of things and use that to remind themselves of their vision and their long-term kind of skin in the game. And there's some people that idolize those stories too much. You know, people who are like, oh, but this happened, you know, this person that, you know, I guess the main example of this is people who have persevered and people kept saying no to them, but they kept going and they were eventually successful, right? A lot of people, Apple really struggled for quite a while. Now it's like the biggest the company ever, but Apple really struggled for a while. And so some people will point to Apple and go, well, they had loads of no's and loads of failures, but they persevered. Actually, what I'd encourage founders to do is look objectively at the long-term vision the why you have that vision. So is there a particular impact you want to have? Then in that same area, if things aren't going well, pivot. So pivot versus perseverance is one thing that kind of gets brought up with founders sometimes. A lot of founders will persevere too long without learning from things that haven't gone well, keep trying to go with the same thing, even though it isn't really getting them anywhere. And then eventually they run out of time or resources or whatever. I would always encourage founders to focus on those long-term stories enough to remind themselves of the vision, but don't idolize them. Do what's right for you, which requires lots and lots of learning. All these different things we talked about today, they're essentially about looking at a couple core areas of the entrepreneurial journey and looking at them in the right way and finding a balance between them that works for you. Not everything will work for everyone. Lots of things won't work for everyone. You got to find a balance within those of what works for you, what mindset motivation works best for me, and all kinds of other things. Find what works for you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think they're all important areas, aren't they? You know, that people need to look into and think about and take note of. And, you know, I've just got one last thing that just came to mind that I don't think I mentioned. Do you know, like, inner circle? So, like, do you think that has an impact on people in business starting out? You know, your inner circle, people around you. You know, some people might not be as effective or might not start out because the people in their circle aren't supportive. They might tell them that it's not good enough, which then makes them think that they're not good enough or it's not going to work out, and how to kind of get around that.
Yeah, 100%. So it's actually funny. I was having this conversation on another podcast I was on recently where we were kind of talking about, well, what are those few closest people to you look like? And when do you start to distance from people that you got close to in a past version of yourself got close to? Here's what I would say is take a really hard look at what negative effect those people are having in your life. So, like, as an example, a lot of my close friends are not entrepreneurs. They're not founders. They could not hack the kind of life that I live, the amount of, you know, effort I put in, the various different places I need to be, sometimes the stress I need to be under. But they're all still very supportive, empathetic, and intelligent people. They just put their energy into other areas. So I think that's a great group of people to be around. Then there are people like what you've described. And so this is where I say you need to really diagnose the actual context. The context you've described is one where people are like, I'm not going to support you. Maybe their own ego is at play and they're saying, well, I could never do this, so I'm going to sabotage you. And they're doing that subconsciously or something. You need to be really, really, really careful, but also aware and conscious in diagnosing that. Because that does have a massive impact on you. If every voice around you is telling you, no, you can't, and is essentially sabotaging you or causing self-sabotage for you, you are going to be held back and slowed down. And it's difficult to understand why. I think we don't realize how much energy things drained from us until they've stopped draining it from us sometimes. And this is one of those things. Your environment's immensely important because the vast majority of our brain power happens in our subconscious. Our subconscious is incredibly powerful, which means the messaging that goes through our subconscious becomes very powerful too. So if you got, you know, 80% of the people that you see or speak to on a regular basis telling you, no, you can't, no, you're not good enough, those thoughts are far more likely to play in your mind. You must surround yourself with great people. Though what great people looks like, again, can be different things. The reason I caveat that is because I read this one tweet from someone that really kind of pissed me off, actually. He was kind of like, I only have 5 friends at any one time. At any one time, I will judge all 5 of those people based on 3 criteria. One of them is how much money you make. Number 2 is how well business is going, something like that. Number 3 is something else similar. All 3 of them were about money and, you know, career progress. And at any one point, if I am doing better at all 3 of those things than someone else in that group, I cut that person off. And I was like, huh? Because that is so immense. That is so toxic. Like, that is so immensely horrible. And it brings up loads of questions, such as, you know, if that means you start off in that group as not being better at anyone than those things, does that mean they should not just cut you off? Or, but it's also, that's not a meaningful relationship. That's not friendship. That's not a real relationship built off of anything meaningful. And so if someone, and so what I don't want people to do is be like, let me cut off people who don't serve me, but serving me means, you know, progress, you know, encouraging you to make more money and that kind of thing. I'm not a believer in that. I'm a believer in look objectively at the overall value someone has in your life, which includes the love they have for you, the empathy, other types of skills, how much they encourage and support you, the intelligence of the conversations you have. Like, do you learn lots from each other? Do you enjoy spending time together? Look at those things and go, is that part of the equation? If none of that is there, or very little of it is there, there's also lots and lots of negativity there, then starting to distance yourself from those people and building new connections that don't have so much of that negativity is so important. It will hold you back as an entrepreneur, but it will hold you back in lots of areas of life. If you're an even semi-ambitious person in any area of life, and that's what your surroundings look like, the chances of you being unhappy or higher, unhealthy or higher, self-sabotaging much higher, staying in the same place, not progressing, not adding value to the world, chances of that kind of stuff's all higher. So you must be able to look objectively at your situation, stick with the things that are really, really beautiful and that are worth loving, and start distancing yourself from the things that aren't. You don't need to be angry or negative about it. You can start distancing with respect for other people involved. This is something I actually read a coach friend of mine wrote about once, probably a few times actually, where he kind of went like, if you need to leave some people behind, do it in a really positive but powerful way. Say to them, look, this is what's going on right now, and I don't feel like this serves either of us right now, so I'm probably going to take a step back. You can start to distance yourself from them, but still make sure you have, if you have some love for them, make sure that you keep up that love, still give them calls, things like that, and start to build relationships with other people instead. There's a saying that's something along the lines of like, the heart grows fonder with distance or something like that. Total fucking lie. I don't know where that came from. But human connection is forged by in-person spending of time together. That's what builds the strongest connections. So start doing more of that, more time in person with people that you do want to be around, whether they're empathetic people, intelligent people, driven people, inspiring people. Surround yourself more with that, distance yourself from that kind of negativity, and that will start to have a huge impact on your own motivation, yourself. Self-sabotage and all kinds of other things like that.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, I love those points. I think it's so true. And I think, like you mentioned, you know, that case, that person online where there was tweeting saying, you know, if these people don't have this set requirements, or if they have more than me, then I cut them off. And I think that's like totally wrong, isn't it? And that's very superficial and materialistic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, they have this pecking order, and it's their own ego and their own level of how they feel about themselves and their self-worth. And if someone's doing better than them, then that's it. And I think you have to be able to accept and be okay with that. And you want other people to do well, and you welcome that in for yourself by, you know, if you're saying, oh, well, that person's got that car, look at them, it's okay for them, you know, or, but, you know, you're not allowing that for yourself if you're having that resentful attitude towards it. You know, you're blocking that off. Yeah. So you should be happy for the people. You know, everyone, you know, is on different levels, and if they're happy, then that's great. But I think, you know, the people you're around, like you said, has such an influence over how we act and how we feel. And in you know, whether that's, you know, intimate relationships, whether that's business relationships, friends, you know, all these things. And I think you have to have very, very clear boundaries on being like, this is the journey I'm on. This is where I'm at. This is what I'm doing to build X, Y, Z. You know, if someone or something is affecting that or dragging you down, you need to put those boundaries in place, don't you? And say, this is not working. This is, you know, X, Y, Z. So it's that communication, isn't it?
Yeah. And,
you know, ultimately, you know, what I think it all comes down to all of this is, you know, knowing yourself, isn't it? And taking full accountability for where you're at and who you are, because agreed, obviously, yeah. You know, as a founder, you're the one who's driving everything. And if you're not mindful or accountable of who you are as a person, then how the hell are you going to move forward in what you're trying to achieve if you can't achieve the internal things within
exactly.
yourself?
Everything starts from within. I agree completely. The energy you give out to the world is the energy you're going to get from the world. And so if you can't, not only can you, you know, not just about putting that positive energy out there, but also it means doing the internal. One of my favorite things to say, which I say all the time, is it's actually kind of a story. Back when I was a young person, so I think a good way to end this off is when I was a teenager, I was a really cynical, angry person because I wanted some of the change that we're talking about now and couldn't create it. And I wanted to make that change by having everyone else change. Every system around me needed to change. Politics needed to change. Business needed to change. My school needed to change. Everything else needed to change. But I was just super, super unhappy, depressed, and cynical about it. And at one point, a friend of mine got really fed up with me, and he turned around and said, "Seven, if you can't help yourself, how are you ever going to help anyone else?" And suddenly I was like, whoa, like that hit me like a ton of bricks, because everything about my life at the time, my mindset, where my energy was going, was all set up, all wrong. I'm glad I learned that lesson. I was probably about 16 at the time, maybe even 15 at the time. I'm really glad I learned that lesson then, because I could have continued with negativity for a much longer time. So I completely agree with you that starting off with the internal there, getting that right first, and then good leadership comes from there. Good culture comes from there. Good energy, good people around you all comes from you doing that first and helping yourself to do that first as much as possible.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, I really appreciate you talking about that, because I think it's really, really powerful. And, you know, it's good that you realize that at that age. And I think sometimes we need those chats, conversations, those wake up calls sometimes. And also, like, you know, is there anything that you're working on, anything you want to promote? You know, where can people find you on social media?
The best place right now, so there's a few different things that I'm kind of working on at the moment, most of which are within the entrepreneurship space. If you are an aspiring founder, an early stage founder, or an underrepresented founder, there might be various different ways I can help you. But the best place to find me as kind of one place to hear about all of it when it comes out is my Instagram, 7.jacobs, basically just my name. Come find me on Instagram. There's a number of things like events and opportunities you can sign up to through there. And I will also let people know about things I'm up to on there when they come up. So yeah, hit me on there. Always happy to chat to people. And thank you so much for having me on here, man.
No, that's great. That's really awesome. I'll definitely put it in the bio and the link, and I'll share your content and everything as well. And no, you're most welcome. It's really good really great to connect with you again, Seven. And I'm really grateful to be able to do this with you. And I think, you know, what you're doing is awesome. And you know, I wish you all the best in what you do.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Likewise, Adam. Yeah. I appreciate it. Speak to you soon.
Yeah, take it easy.
Peace.
Bye.
Got it. Got it.